Now, the Three Martini Lunch with Greg Corumbus and Jim Garrity.
And welcome, everyone, to the Tuesday edition of the Three Martini Lunch, along with Jim Garrity of National Review. I'm Greg Corumbus of Radio America. We have good, bad, and crazy martinis for conservatives today. And, Jim, we've got new polling out by Quinnipiac University in three key battleground states, and it's pretty good news for Donald Trump, especially compared to where he was not that long ago. Trump fans will instinctively say, "We told you so," and they may be right. We'll see going on down the line. But in the states of Florida, Ohio, and Pennsylvania, they're all very, very close. In Florida, Clinton leads Trump 43-42. In Ohio, Trump leads Clinton 43-39. In Pennsylvania, Hillary leads Trump 43-42. If you're wondering why, it's because voters hate them both very, very much. In Florida, Hillary's underwater by 20 points, 28 in Ohio, 21 in Pennsylvania. Trump underwater in Florida by 20 points, 21 in Ohio, and 16 in Pennsylvania. So, Jim, the good news is that the Democrats are really doing a horrible job picking a nominee, too. And that could be not only mean a competitive presidential race, but could also mean that the Republicans down ballot, like we talked about yesterday, get a reprieve.
It is better for Republicans and conservatives as a whole if Trump runs better. If you want to see Pat Toomey reelected in Pennsylvania, if you want to see Ron Johnson reelected in Wisconsin, if you're hoping that, look, Mark Kirk is going to vote for us more in Illinois than whatever Democrat replaces him, or any Democrat trying to replace him, then this is good news, because the more Trump is competitive, the more the Democrats have to focus on that, and the less they can spend focusing on the Senate, and increase the chances of a Trump blowout and loss of the House as well become less and less likely. In addition to those state polls you mentioned there, Greg, we should point out that there's a Harvard poll that has Clinton ahead, but only 46% to 40%. They said swing states. They didn't specify which swing states, but they said it was only 45 to 41. There's rumors that at some point PPP is going to come out today with a poll that has Trump only down four. So far, these polls would indicate that most Republicans are falling in line and saying, all right, well, I may not like him, but I hate Hillary more. We'll see if these are outliers, but the fact that we're seeing a couple of them suggests that they're not. And we'll know more a week from now, 2 weeks from now. But for those of us like myself who are pointing, look, Hillary, saying that Trump is polling very terribly against Hillary, well, maybe time to adjust that. I've been giving Trump a lot of grief over his bad poll numbers. I feel like I have to give him credit when they get better. This should be a five-alarm fire for the Hillary Clinton campaign. They should not be thinking this is going to be easy. And I got to say, Greg, so far I'm really underwhelmed by the way the Hillary and the Democrats are responding to Trump so far.
Yeah, they haven't learned anything that all the Republicans failed to learn. At the same time, interestingly, in the same poll, Bernie Sanders beats Trump in all three of those states. They're all close. It would be a 2-point win in Florida, 2-point win in Ohio, 6-point win in Pennsylvania. So all of those are very, very competitive. And he's got he's more favorable than unfavorable in all three of those states. But as folks still have the warm fuzzies towards Bernie Sanders, let's take a look into the future. In fact, if he or his policies were to be enacted here in this country, let's go down to Venezuela. Reports from both the Washington Post and townhall.com paint a pretty bleak picture. Let's start with the Post. It's come to this. The country with the largest oil reserves in the world can't afford to brew its own beer, stay in its own time zone, or even have its own people show up to work more than two times a week. Venezuela, in other words, is well past the point of worrying that its economy might collapse. It already has. That's the only way to describe an economy that the International Monetary Fund thinks is going to shrink 8% and have 720% inflation this year. And that's not even the worst of it. No, that's the fact that the state itself is near collapse. Venezuela already has the world's second highest murder rate, and now the Chavista regime seems to be threatening violence of its own if the opposition succeeds in recalling President Nicolas Maduro. It's a grim race between anarchy and civil war. Over at Town Hall, they quote a report from the Pan Am Post pointing out that people have nothing to eat there. It's a painful reality that people hunt cats, dogs, and pigeons, stray animals, to ease their hunger. They're also picking vegetables up off the ground and trash to eat as well. On Sunday, May 1st, six Venezuelan military officials were arrested for stealing goats because there's no food on base. So, Jim, that's the utopia that Marx and Lenin dreamed of, but it always comes to this.
You know, Greg, I can think of no – there are probably other more bloody examples of the the net effect of socialism, what it leads to, what it brings to. I do think you put it very well when you said an 8% contraction, the second highest murder rate, 700% inflation. And then the bad news is, wait, what was that? Was the good news? That's the upside? You know, it's a horrible story. And here's the thing, like, life gives humanity enough problems with earthquakes, floods, famine, I mean, you name it. It's bad, you know, the natural disasters. Socialism is a man-made disaster. This is something that is chosen, or in many cases imposed from on high, imposed with force. You would think, I remember thinking, seeing this this same kind of observation in North Korea, also a socialist state, although some people dispute whether it's just, you know, it's too crazy to qualify as traditional socialism, which they were ordering bodies be cremated because of the rampant cannibalism, because of how bad the famine was there, Greg. When widespread cannibalism is a problem, what does it take to get people to say, hey, let's try something different?
Right.
Wouldn't that strike you as the biggest, clearest, flashing neon sign, if you had the electricity, but they don't, indicator that you have, your policies have failed and it's time to try something new? My frustration and my suspicion is, Greg, that at some point you, this way, college students will look at that and say, well, okay, but it wasn't pure socialism.
Right.
They didn't do it right.
Well, you talk about one potential ecological benefit from the destruction of a state, and that cannibalism would remove the need to bury or cremate people. It reminds me, Jim, of the movie Caddyshack, which, of course, was one of the most forward-thinking movies in cinematic history. Reminds me of the scene where Al Shervik is making his first turn there on Bushwood and says this as he sees his condominiums going up across the way.
I tell you, country clubs and cemeteries, biggest wastes of prime real estate. Well, dead people. They don't want to be buried nowadays. Ecology, right?
Ecology, exactly. Well, out in Seattle, of course, where else would this come from? There's a woman named Katrina Spade, and she has decided that the way that we bury or dispose of people after they have passed away is just not cutting it for her. So she explains why her way is better.
The options we have for our bodies when we die, besides their environmental toll, they just didn't resonate for me. And for a lot of people, I've now found that to be true. They just don't have a lot of meaning. People are starting to think about how they want their deaths to be and what should happen with their bodies when they die. It's like this perfect historical moment for human composting.
For human composting. Jim, we knew it was coming to this. Now Seattle, which already checks your trash for, make sure you got everything separated properly. Apparently they're going to be checking out your funeral as well to make sure that you're giving back to the earth.
Greg, you've got to tell them Soylent Compost is people. You're not the only one with classic movie references. a couple of weeks ago, one of those news of the weird stories was human foot found in recycling bin in Seattle. Being the wise ass that I am, Greg, my response was, oh, come on. Everybody in Seattle knows that belongs in compost, not recycling. I thought I was joking. I thought that was too absurd to be real. But no, in fact, that is apparently the proposal on the table up there in Seattle. We should give credit. I do believe a judge struck down the rule that was going to have the cops going through your trash to see if you were composting and finding you if you didn't. If you remember, that was the Audi commercial that portrayed the green police in the not-too-distant future.
Yes.
Sending SWAT teams against people for failure to compost. That wasn't so fictional, at least in the Seattle area. A beautiful place, a beautiful part of the country that is apparently run by absolute nutjobs.
Jim, the left is going so crazy that is it more challenging now for people like you who kind of like to have fun exaggerating to the extreme that they're almost beating you to it?
Yeah. or the other thing is that the wildest joke you can think of, you get some responses of, shh, don't give them ideas. Yeah, so check on grandma. Make sure that if some of your beloved ones up in the Pacific Northwest are getting up in years, maybe you want to make those instructions of what to do with their remains very explicit and very clear, because the Greens will be like, hey, I'll take that. You know, there are carrots that could use that body. What a lovely note to close on, right, Greg?
Yeah, cheery for the day. Jim.
Happy Tuesday, everybody.
Jim Garrity of National Review. I'm Greg Corumbus of Radio America. Thanks for being with us today. And be sure to tune in again on Wednesday for the next 3 Martini Lunch.